I mean, I was Al Bundy before Al Bundy was around. I told him I wanted to be a shoe salesman, and whatever, Todd.
Right.
The next week, I told them I wanted to be a weatherman, and I wanted to be a meteorologist. And they're like, that's better.
Yeah, we're getting there.
That's more aspirations there for a six-year-old. And it just stuck with me.
Welcome to The Conversation. This is Matt Price, here today with KATV's weatherman, excuse me, meteorologist, Todd Yacobian. Todd, really excited to have you here.
Thank you so much. Yep. Glad to share my passion with another, I guess, self-proclaimed weather geek.
Self-proclaimed and my wife proclaimed weather geek.
Good.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to have you here today. Why don't we just jump right into it? Why did you get into weather?
Well, thanks again for having me here. Okay, we got to go back to when I was 6 years old. I guess it was 1 week I told my... This is the way, because you don't remember much when you're that age. But I told my parents 1 week I wanted to be a shoe salesman. I mean, I was Al Bundy before Al Bundy was around. I told them I wanted to be a shoe salesman. And whatever, Todd.
Right.
The next week, I told them I wanted to be a weatherman. And I wanted to be a meteorologist. And they're like, that's better.
Yeah, we're getting there.
There's more aspirations there for a six-year-old. And it just stuck with me. And I still don't know, because I've asked my mom, I asked her, what was it that got my interest going in weather? Because I really don't remember. And the only thing I can trace it back to was a tree outside my bedroom that was probably about 6 or 7 feet away from the window, got struck by lightning.
Huh.
And the lightning and the electricity traveled into the house, and the baseboard started smoldering. And I think, and I always say that, pun intended, sparked my interest in meteorology.
You know, that's hysterical, because my parents tell a similar story about me when I was about 6 months old, and I was asleep in the crib, and lightning struck a tree that was right behind our house, and a branch came in and kind of shattered one of the little panes of glass. And they said, they always tell this story in the context of, I sleep really, really hard, and I have since I was 6 months old, because they actually came in the room because they heard it. And I was still asleep, and there was still like a little piece of glass like on my face, just tiny. But, yeah, that's a great story. That's really funny that you also had a similar.
That's how it traced back. And I was always scared of thunderstorms. That made me scared, and I guess I wanted to find out more about thunderstorms.
Right.
And they would always joke. I mean, you know, when I'm 6, 7, 8 years old, whenever there was a tornado warning, I would hide in the corner of the kitchen. And those were the days. You know, you didn't have all the high-tech stuff. You didn't know where the tornado... Right. All you knew, the sirens were going off, and you better take cover.
Right.
But yeah, I grew up watching Tom Bonner.
Okay.
I grew up watching Ned.
Yeah.
Now I'm working with him.
Yeah.
I grew up watching Ken Rainey, who used to be over at Channel 11. You know, I grew up watching Little Rock TV, and so it's so cool to be a part of it now.
Right, right. Well, and it's... You've done... It appears that you've done a little bit more in the age of social media with weather than a lot of folks around, and really embraced it and just dove headfirst into social media and how that can expand the outreach of the message of severe thunderstorms, sure, that sort of thing, and just educating people about weather.
I was very blessed to get in on social media early. Mm-hmm. And when Twitter came out and I started hearing about it, I asked a buddy of mine, his name's Bobby Powers, and I said, I don't know, should I do this? He goes, give it a whirl, try it out. And not hardly anybody in the Little Rock media market was in on it. And so the next thing I know, I'm putting out all this information, and my followership went up and up and up. Yeah. And I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is such an efficient way to get weather information out quickly.
Right.
And without any of the, you know, long-windedness that you have sometimes. You know, it used to be, 140?
Right.
You can get right to the point.
Oh, yeah.
And I've embraced it. I love it. I like the interaction with everybody. And the same goes with Facebook. Mm-hmm. Although if you had to ask me between Facebook and Twitter, I'm going Twitter.
Yeah,
but I do
I'm
like
with you
Facebook.
On that. Yeah. I've seen your Facebook Live videos, and just the comments are just flying, just scrolling through there. I couldn't even begin to keep up with all those that are coming so fast.
I can't keep up with them either. And sometimes you get a few bad apples in
there,
and
people
are like, what did he say? What? And I'm like, I don't know. That was 30 exits ago.
Right, right. And everyone's asking, like, what's going to happen in, you know, Heber Springs?
Right.
What's going to happen in Clinton, Marshall? Be like, well, general area, you know?
It's like, go back and watch this whole thing, because we just went over that.
Right, right.
Right.
So I'm a big Anchorman, the movie fan.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So I have to ask, are the weathermen, are the meteorologists in town, are you guys competitive with each other?
Absolutely, we're competitive, okay. But we're also friends.
Okay.
But, you know, when there's severe weather or any sort of weather, there's a competitive nature mm-hmm. to the business. But at the end of the day, we're all still in the same business. We're all in this together. And we're friends. We're never hostile to each other. Right. We're not on Anchorman, you know, and say, hey, there's KARK, where, you yeah. know, and holding baseball bats. No, that's not the case. As a matter of fact, a guy over at Channel 4 now, Hayden Nix, mm-hmm. he was my intern.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he's a great guy. And so, yeah, we're competitive.
Right.
Of course, I want to be able to say to my management, hey, look, you know, I'm bringing ratings in or mm-hmm. whatever like that. And I want to be competitive.
Right.
And I want to be able to do it. But at the end of the day, we're all friends.
So you guys aren't like emailing each other on the day of a weather event, each other's like 7-day forecast. And like, man, Todd, you were so wrong.
No.
And I nailed it or something like that.
No, but there are some.
In my mind, that's what you guys
there
do.
There are some text messages with others that, you know, like, right. ha, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw this hail coming from a month away.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I enjoy the weather. I enjoy following your social profiles on Twitter and Facebook. I also really enjoy the weather blog.
Thank you.
Because you get really deep with some of the information. You know, going in and saying, and I'm probably going to butcher this, the NAM versus the GFS versus the Euro. You know, a model is not a forecast.
That's true.
So I'm curious, for those of you that don't also read the weather blog religiously, can you kind of talk us through, get a little technical here, on the NAM, the GFS, just kind of weather models mm-hmm. in general and what they are, how they're developed, and then how you use those?
That's a loaded question. Let's see, we got the next 2 hours.
Yeah, we've got some time.
Okay. Good job, by the way. The NAM, North American model, the European, the GFS, those are all the and models. I get into the habit of calling them models when they really should be called guidance.
Okay.
Because they guide us into making a forecast. And they're all completely different. And it's gotten to the point now, in my opinion, where it's information overload when we forget the basics of the weather and we rely too heavily upon these models.
What are the basics?
Just the basics of how storm systems, when you have an area of low pressure coming through and an Arctic air mass, you know, what happens?
Right.
Forget what the model said. What's happened in the past?
Right.
What, you know, I've seen this before. I've seen this, you know, 2 winters ago and this happened. And I know that this type of air mass behaves this way and not the way this model is showing. Mm-hmm. And so we look way too much, I think, at those. And I'm as guilty as that as anybody because I'm like a kid in a candy store whenever right. I see the new models. Now, the differences between them, they're, for instance, the GFS and the European are global models encompassing the Earth and puts out the grid is actually the resolution has gotten a lot higher over time. But then we look at mesoscale models like the HRRR. These are super high resolution.
And the HRR stands for?
It's the high resolution rapid refresh.
There we go.
But the pirate model, we call it the RR.
Right.
And then you've got the NAM, the North mm-hmm. America model. And these are models that only go out 84 hours, like the NAM goes out 84 hours. It's more high resolution. It picks up on things easily, such as terrain and its impact on the weather, because mountains can have impact right. on weather. Where the global models are more what we call coarse, and they're good for long-range forecasting and for trends like that. So, like I said, I got to get out of the habit of calling them models because what they really are it's guidance to making a forecast. Right. And we'll probably talk about this a little bit later on, but some people will look at a model that comes out, and it will show 3 feet of snow and put it out on social media and say, well, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And then, of course, it doesn't.
Right, right. Who puts out the Euro and the GFS?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a real geek. Like, I kind of want to know, like, how they're compiled.
Right.
And then who puts them out? Like, how, like, what's that
well, the,
look like?
NOAA, the National Oceanic okay. and Atmospheric Administration, the National Weather Service, they have supercomputers that
right.
ingest tons of information from weather balloons, mm-hmm. all the information that, that's just one of them. But they ingest all this information. They send up balloon soundings, mm-hmm. weather balloons up twice a day, and they get instruments, they have instruments attached to them that get measurements all the way up into the atmosphere, all the way up as high as it will go, these balloons, and that data is put into the computer models. And all these computer models are different the way that all the equations, the algorithms, they're all run different, the physics in them. Mm-hmm. And so they're all different. And every now and then they tweak it. And when they tweak the computer models, sometimes it changes the way they look and the way they behave on certain scenarios.
They might overvalue one aspect and undervalue something else.
And the one thing that's very frustrating is the fact that the European computer model has been far superior. Now, I don't want to trash the American GFS because it has done well in some situations. But if you have to pick between the two, you're going to look at the European computer model and you're going to base a forecast. If there's disagreements, you're going to base it on.
You're going to lean that way.
And it's frustrating that we don't put the resources in to having the best modeling and best weather forecasting in the world. Maybe they are. I haven't seen it yet.
Right.
Hopefully they are.
So the Euro is put out by the NOAA, the equivalent of NOAA. Yeah.
Right. Okay. In Europe. And it's just a more reliable model. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating because the GFS shows snow all the time. Right. And I want to believe it, but I can't.
Yeah.
But when the Euro shows it, I'm like, that's something I can follow. Yeah.
10% just went to 60%.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So in looking at the guidance, how do you then, like, what's your process after that? I mean, you talk about the basics. You look at the guidance. You look at the basics. And is that what you use to create your forecast?
Yes. And even on my days off, I have to follow the weather. In my opinion, this is what I do because everybody's different. I look at the models even on my days off, so I know what's going on. So I'm not away for a few days and then jump into a situation where I look at a model and say, okay, I know that. And then if I had been following it, I would have known that this model's been having problems.
Right.
And so I follow it every day. And when I get in, by the time I get into work, I've already got an idea of how my forecast is going to go. But I start off, and here I go. I start off with the GFS, and I look at what we call MOS numbers, model output statistics. Mm-hmm. And these are highs and lows, precipitation chances. And I start off with that, and I make a forecast. And then I go back, and I compare the European to it, and make adjustments and figure out, okay, what's different, what should happen here, which one's going to be more correct. And then I also look at other forecasts, like from the National Weather Service, just after I've made mine, to say, okay, am I missing anything? And I look at what they're saying to see if I'm missing anything. And sometimes I agree with what they're saying. Sometimes I disagree with what they're saying. And that's just a meteorologist's interpretation of the weather. We're all using these tools for guidance.
Right. I'm curious, this is mainly just because I'm very interested in mathematics and computers and that sort of, and modeling and that sort of thing. When you have a feeling that one of the models is off, in your experience, is it tied to a specific type of weather pattern, or is it tied to kind of a failure in the math? If that makes sense, I don't know.
I'm not quite sure I'm following, but I know what computer model handles certain situations better.
Okay,
like. I know the GFS is not going to handle Arctic air. No model handles Arctic air that well.
Okay.
When there's a lot going on in the winter and spring months, when there's a lot of activity, a lot of movement within the jet stream, the models just don't, there's going to be a lot of disagreement. Where there's peace, love, and harmony is in the summer months.
It's just hot all the time.
And then you'll get a hurricane or something like that, and then they're going to disagree on the track. And so you're just focusing on one entity, a hurricane, and how it's how the weather pattern is going to affect its movement. But there's so many different moving parts, I think, in the winter and the spring that cause so much variability in all the data.
That's kind of what I'm the variability of the data.
There's a lot of it, and when we one of the things about Arctic air, and I'll talk about this a lot because I love cold weather. Models just don't see it that well because it's very shallow, it's low to the ground, and these models don't pick up on that well. So
that's why Northwest Arkansas always gets more snow than we do because the blocking
the
right
block
there.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've been reading the block.
Yeah.
the Ozarks. If the Ozarks did not exist, we would be more open to Arctic air masses in central and southern Arkansas and more winter precipitation. But these very shallow air masses, they're so low to the ground that they can't move across the Ozarks very easily. They have to go around the Ozarks. So that blocks things up. And then if you got moisture flying in, you got the moisture that's going to outpace the cold air. So right. you really want the cold air in place before the moisture gets here to get any big winter storm.
Right. I've always kind of just held a rule just, you know, from following and hoping for snow and Little Rock and everything as a kid. It's basically, if the snow is not coming from the southwest, if it's not snowing in Hot Springs first,
that's
then
right.
it's probably not going to snow in Little Rock.
That's exactly right.
That's how I think about it.
It comes from, it's usually overrunning situations. The cold air is in place, and it comes up from the south and southwest.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm an amateur meteorologist.
It's not your imagination. That's exactly right. When you see me in the Hot Springs, Mount Ida reporting snow, right. look out, Central Arkansas.
It might happen. Yeah. It might happen. Yeah. Okay, so now we can kind of back out, zoom out a little bit from the super detailed part of the interview, which was really just to satisfy me. One of the things that you've been doing this for a long time, you're from Little Rock, so you have a good idea of how crazy the weather is anyway as a kid. What's probably been the most memorable weather event, maybe in your career, when you were, you know, you were paying attention, you were setting forecasts, and you were just shocked by the outcome.
Shocked by the outcome. Oh my gosh, that's a great question. In my career, shocked by the outcome. No, okay, let's start with my career in Montana. That's where I got my first job in television. There was no shock there. It always snowed.
Right.
Then the next job was in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The Veterans Day outbreak of tornadoes in 2000, between 2000 and 2004. Mm-hmm. But there was the Veterans Day outbreak of tornadoes. That was a little, it was in November, a little shocking. We were predicting, I think, 4 or 5 inches of snow in Chattanooga. And so we had all these reporters everywhere the next morning, and we were going to the mall. It was all rain. It was only snow in the mountains. And so the reporters were making fun of us, the meteorologists, with rulers and showing, look at how much snow we got, and they're holding, you know, a ruler up, and it's pouring rain on
it.
And so that was a little shocking. But on a serious note, here in Arkansas, I think it was shocking, but we knew it was coming. It had to have been the Mayflower Bologna tornado in my career. There was a high risk that day, even though a part of that tornado was not in the high risk, it was in the moderate risk, but that's not a big point. But we knew there was the potential, but there was, when we saw the debris ball, I remember identifying the debris ball on the radar, and I saw that, and I thought, gosh, I hope that goes away quickly, and it didn't, and that was the shocking thing about how long that thing stayed, as strong as it was, and on the ground. It was really shocking, I think, to see it follow that path near the 2011 path. This was back in 2014, the 2011 Bologna tornado. So that was kind of shocking, even though we knew there was the potential, but the way it unfolded, where it was really just one thunderstorm that day that caused all the problems. If we didn't have that one thunderstorm, so many people would have been alive.
Right.
And that was shocking.
Yeah. And it was because of really the strength.
The strength tornado.
Of it, yeah.
There was, I did some research on that, and it followed a boundary, and it attached itself to a boundary, and it just kept chugging along. And you're looking at it on radar. And when you see that debris ball on radar, I remember thinking, I mean, that's just a purple area on radar? No, that's somebody's house.
Right.
That's people's houses.
Right.
That's trees.
Yeah.
That's cars. Mm-hmm. And that just makes your stomach sink, because you're sitting there in a quiet studio talking about this, and you know that there's literally hell that's going on the ground.
Right, right. You know, that kind of highlights the other side of your job. I mean, you're trying to help people, trying to give them, you know, predictions. This is how you need to stay safe. This is what you need to worry about. And, you know, it's in, unfortunately, in real life and death scenarios for a lot of people. And then on the other side, predicting 4 inches of snow and there's just a bunch of rain.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, that's a feast and famine type environment.
If you forecast 4 inches of snow and it doesn't snow, you're a little upset, but you'll get over it.
Right, right.
But yeah, the severe weather aspect is obviously the one we take so seriously.
Sure.
It has so many different consequences to that sort of forecast. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to get a snow forecast wrong, because those are the ones people remember.
Oh, yeah.
So I learned my lesson in Chattanooga.
Yes, I definitely remember. I mean, it's happened several times when schools were closed and then not a bit of snow the next day.
Yeah, the kids don't argue that one.
No, the kids love it. The parents, on the other hand, were like, damn you, Todd.
Yeah, I know. I've heard worse.
Right, I'm sure. Since so much of your communication with your, you know, your viewers and your readers takes place over social media, something that's happening outside, you know, in the broader social media environment is fake news. Mm-hmm. And since I follow you very closely, I know that there's a lot of possibly fake news in the weather. Does the weather have a fake news problem?
Yes, it does. And it's had one for quite a while. We had fake weather before the news had fake news. So this has been an issue for us for a long time. And it's a matter of knowing facts and examining and thinking about the situation and understanding this isn't right. And mm-hmm. I'll explain. I'll be in a severe weather situation. I'll give you an example. This is right after I got back home. I got back home in 2005. I remember it was sometime around 2007. I asked for pictures. If anybody has any severe weather pictures, mm-hmm. send them to us. Mm-hmm. Well, some guy, we're in a tornado outbreak, and a guy sends me a picture. Well, I thought, well, this is happening right now. No, there was a little date stamp. It was from 3 years ago. I meant to send me pictures of what's happening today, not what happened 3 years ago.
Right.
But now in the age of the internet and social media, there are, and it's usually kids, that are sending pictures that they'll Google tornadoes and find some tornado and say, this is happening in Greenbrier. And you have to be able to identify that, because if I retweet that with my following, I've just caused panic. It's like yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
So I have to carefully examine that. And there are programs that we can put those pictures through to verify their legitimacy. Wow. During the Mayflower Felonia tornado, I received a picture. And according to the radar, I saw what was going on. But when I got a picture in, I was very hesitant about putting it on the air. I was like, this can't be happening, because it was just utter devastation. And then we had Brian Infinger, who was a photographer for us at the time, and he started texting me. It's devastating. And I said, this picture is legitimate. And you look at certain things in these pictures, like foliage on trees. If there's a tornado outbreak in March and everything's green, it's not legitimate. But we've been fighting that for a long, long time about knowing what's real and what's fake. And I guess maybe fake isn't quite the word, because they're legitimate pictures, but not from that situation.
Right, right. Well, and it's got to be extremely hard, too, because, you know, you have to figure out what's real, what's fake, and then you're also in this very heightened sense of, you know, of urgency, because if it is real, you want to get it out there as fast as possible.
Exactly, because time is everything in a severe weather situation, so you have to... And it's gotten better over the past couple of years, I think, with this, but it was a problem with flooding. I got some fake flooding pictures, and I thought it was legitimate because there was a car underwater in a Walmart parking lot, and I was told it was in Benton. Well, I mean, it's Arkansas.
Right.
There's a Walmart.
It's a safe bet one of them's flooding.
Yeah, and so I've been duped before.
Right.
And everybody has, and you just got to go back and delete and learn.
Right, right. So I want to veer off a little bit into kind of just the media world, since you're such an active participant in the media landscape. The FCC just lifted a rule called the main studio requirement. There's a lot of speculation about what the impact of that rule could be. Nothing has really happened yet that I know of or that's been reported, but I think it's interesting to talk about, especially in the context of weather. People are speculating that it could allow local broadcasters, so KATV, THV, all of them, could basically relocate. And they could do all of their news broadcasts from, say, Memphis or Dallas for the entire state of Arkansas. I'm curious what you think of that from a doing the weather perspective.
Well, the Weather Channel kind of does that already. They're based out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, that's true.
And they are doing severe weather information for all over the country. So you know what you get there, because sometimes these people, they don't say the names of towns accurately, do they?
Right, right.
Let me just first start off by saying I do not represent the views of my parent company when I talk about this issue, because my expertise is the weather and not
when we edit
this,
it, we'll put that at the beginning. How about that? Yeah.
I don't know the subject all that well, but I can tell you this, that I highly doubt local news and local weather will ever be taken away from the Little Rock market. I don't think that will ever happen in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I think there will always be a local element, in my opinion, especially in markets like this. I can see something like that happening in smaller markets.
Right, like Jonesboro or something, or Texarkana maybe.
Something like that, maybe Texarkana or in some of the small – for instance, in Montana, where I started out, some of these small markets, they already do some stuff where they share – stories from Helena, the state capital,
and
share it. I can see something where things are central casted in one place and distributed to others, and made made it to look like it's local. I just don't ever see that happening in this market. I think we're too big of a market for that to ever happen. Mm-hmm. There's too much that goes on here. Our loyal viewers are there. Why would that ever happen here? I just, again, I don't represent the views of my parent company,
right.
I just don't ever see that being a problem in this market.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to think about, especially in terms of just the changes going on in media across the landscape, publishing, TV, everything, to think about that and how that's impacted the local news across the country. You know, so it's just an interesting piece, and I hope you're right. I hope.
Yeah, and you got to think about all the different ways you can get information now.
Right.
It's and TV is trying to stay relevant. And, mm-hmm. and again, I'm not a TV executive, so I don't know all the ins and outs of this, but you know, it's a constant thing where you've got to stay up with the times. And mm-hmm. so we're just trying to stay relevant. I think TV, radio, and, you know, newspapers, all right. publications are
podcasts.
Yeah. And you want to be the place where people get their information.
Right.
And that's what we're trying to do all the time at Channel 7 is to give, and that comes down to the basics, good content.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give good content, if you give an accurate forecast, if you're there, they're going to come to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what it all comes down to. And that's what we keep trying to do every day.
Right, right. Well, and I, you know, you guys do a great job with it, especially with the weather blog and the videos.
Thank you.
For dorky people like me, I love it. So have you ever met Jim Cantore?
No, I've never met Jim. I know people who know him, and I'm told he's actually shorter than I am. So I don't know if that's true, but he, you know, Jim has a passion for weather that I admire.
Yeah.
And when he gets into thunder snow,
oh man. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's out of control. It's always, it's also one of those like rules that I have that if the Weather Channel sends a correspondent to Little Rock, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's almost guaranteed. Like Pulaski County, you're safe. Like it's going to be okay. It's going to be somewhere else.
and a funny thing, when I was working in Chattanooga, I'm driving downtown Chattanooga and I was with my wife and we're driving and I see, I'm drawing a blank. He was the hurricane expert at the Weather Channel. Not John Hope. Yeah, that was a long time ago. There was another guy, and I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, I saw him walking down the sidewalk, and I said, "There's Dr. So-and-so." And, he was visiting from Atlanta, and I pulled over on the bridge and stopped the car and ran, "Dr. Gosh, I'm drawing a blank." Anyway, so he's like, "Who's this nutcase?"
Right, right. This guy needs to find a hobby.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't ask what your thoughts are on climate change.
That's a question that I have received, and the thing about what it's gotten to now is that people follow me on social media, people watch me on TV for the weather, and so it is now a political issue. So I don't get into it. I think there are organizations who want me to get into it,
mm-hmm.
but it's a political issue now, and my job is not to take sides. People follow me for the weather.
Right.
That's what they follow me for.
Right.
And I know that's what they follow me for. And they don't want me talking politics.
Mm.
And I don't want to because you're going to alienate half of your audience.
Right.
And so, of course, I have opinions, but I don't voice those. But when it comes to climate change, nobody argues. There's not a single person out there who argues the climate is changing, has always changed. I'm a firm believer in no matter where you fall on this issue, we all want the same thing, and that's we want a nice environment to live in. So again, I stay away from that just because I know why people follow me. So I stay away from politics.
I have to say that was a very good answer.
Should I run for office?
Yeah,
with an answer?
Yeah. we can introduce you to some folks.
I think we all want the same thing, but it's again, there's not a single person out there on either side of the argument, in my opinion. Everybody believes in climate. By its very definition, climate is just changed, and it has.
Right.
And so just take care of the earth.
Right.
That's all.
That's good.
We all can agree with that.
So one of the other things I wanted to ask you, I'm trying to make this a recurring question to each guest. What has been the biggest failure you've had?
The biggest failure?
Yeah, the biggest, because I know your business is in forecasting. So
Wow, gosh. Once I thought I was wrong, but I was mistaken. The biggest failure, besides that Chattanooga one?
Besides that one.
It was just a few years ago here. We were forecasting snow, and it was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. We were forecasting snow, and it never happened.
Hmm.
But we saw it wasn't going to happen about a day out, but everybody still thought it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up writing an apology on the blog.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I remember that. Because I remember thinking as I was reading it, I was like, I don't understand why they're giving him so much grief about this.
Well,
like, there are reasons he said it might not happen, but this is, you know,
people are going to disagree with me about failures because, you know, again, all goes back to snow. When you say 2 to 4 inches of snow, all people hear is 4 inches.
That's right.
And they don't hear the 2 inches. They just hear 2 to 4. Oh, we're getting 4 inches. Uh-huh. And so if they don't get 4 inches of snow, it's a failure. That's another battle we fight all the time.
Right. So, you know, for some of the conspiracy theorists out there, is there a meteorologist-only mutual fund that you guys are all invested in that invests in the grocery stores, the milk and bread business?
Yeah, I'll give you the name of my broker after this podcast. No. You know, there's, I know people who, natural gas, you know, you see natural gas prices go up and down and meteorologists see things coming and going, the prices of, and I don't understand all that market, but there, you know, it's a big deal in forecasting cold weather and how much energy is going to be needed. And that affects prices of those commodities.
Right. And when I was looking at WeatherBell, briefly thought it would be a good idea to pay for that service. And I'm not a meteorologist at all. And I was looking at, you know, the different types of customers they have, and I was really surprised to see, you know, financial firms on there were tracking the data really closely.
You'd be surprised how far-reaching of an impact meteorology is, because there's companies like WeatherBell who consult energy companies, but salt and sand crews for cities, because they got to be able to buy enough salt and sand for a winter. So they're asking, all right, what kind of winter are we going to have? And they'll say, okay, you're going to have below average snowfall. Well, then they know not to stock up as much as previous years. Mm-hmm. Or they say, yeah, you're going to have a lot of snow this year. And then they know to stock up. So there are many different aspects that companies, private sector companies like that, where they make their money and they consult.
Right. The National Weather Service has an office in North Little Rock?
Yes.
Right? And then obviously the local news channels. I'm curious how you guys interact with the National Weather Service.
We have a partnership with them,
okay.
Especially in severe weather.
Right.
Most of the time. We have a chat room where everybody in the media and the National Weather Service is in it during a severe weather outbreak, and we share information as best we can. Sometimes it gets crazy, but we're in constant communication with them every storm that's going on. And we'll be in the middle of a tornado warning, and we'll see on radar that it's falling apart, and they're telling us we're thinking about canceling. Mm-hmm. And so there's a partnership in getting that type of information out to all the viewers.
Yeah, that's funny because I remember hearing you say, I think this is going to fall off soon. It's not going to come back.
Right.
So, okay, that's interesting. That's great to know from a consumer of weather forecast that you guys are all communicating in a severe situation. That's great.
When it's a life and death situation, we want to make sure everybody's safe. And so we share information with the National Weather Service. And so that's something that has been going on now for several years now, and it keeps getting better and better, and new ways are discovered and tried out communicating that information and getting that information back and forth to each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, Todd, I really appreciate you coming on the conversation today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for letting me ask my extremely dorky questions.
They were dorky. This is fun. This is my first podcast I've ever done.
Welcome.
This is fun.
Great. I'm glad to hear it. Well, thanks everyone for listening. This has been another episode of The Conversation.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.